talking to people and going through this data, and obviously seeing these areas, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Is this a clean, you know, transitional fuel that we're tapping into here, or is this just a regular old fossil fuel?
Well, at the burner tip, gas is about, you know, half the emissions of coal. But, the, you know, gas is methane, and there's a lot of leakage along the way. So if you look at the full cycle emissions, like, you know, leakage at the drill site, leakage during the pipeline process, you know, leakage throughout the whole life cycle. You know, some would say that it's worse than coal, especially LNG. You know, pipeline gas is probably better than coal. You know, if it's used locally, like, you know, the gas that we burn in Canada is probably actually making some kind of a CO2 reduction. But if you look at LNG, you know, there's one paper that was published last September. I can give you a reference to it by a fellow at Cornell. And basically, coal, you know, LNG transported across the Pacific is something like 30% worse than coal. You say, well, you know, the promoters would say, but we're replacing old, ancient coal plants that are very inefficient. Well, maybe, but if you, you know, ship it to China's coal plants are actually quite new. I mean, if you look at the amount of coal that is burned, it's just taking off like a rocket. So a lot of China's coal plants are quite efficient. You know, that argument, I don't think holds a lot of water. I mean, you know, please tell me what specific coal plant this LNG is going to displace, and nobody will tell you that. It's just sort of a meme that that people use. You know, for some things, like if you look at making steel and a lot of kind of some of the manufacturing processes, electricity is not a good match for that. You know, in terms of things that require massive amounts of heat. And so we're likely going to have to be using fossil fuels at some level, you know, for specific purposes like that, where electricity is not a good match. But, you know, selling them off as fast as possible doesn't make any sense to me, you know, especially when you consider the climate impacts of doing that.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at Eskina.com.
And thanks to our friends at CICK Radio in Smithers, BC, for that report. LNG is being supported and promoted by the BC government, and the first ports. Facilities have come online to start the export overseas of LNG. We can expect to see a lot more around this issue and some of the impacts of what it takes to get LNG out of the ground. Thanks to CICK for that report and David Messick. Also, he was interviewing David Hughes of the Global Sustainability Research Organization. He's an earth scientist who's been worked 32 years in the field. Now it's time for Gardening with Embark, and we will get on to that. And coming up in a few minutes, what are you and Adam talking about?
We're talking about what happened in Russia after the end of the Cold War, the collapse of the Soviet Union. It was Russia,
right?
And a bit about that there really wasn't much aid given, but they were promoted to be capitalist, and Adam will say how they didn't quite understand what that meant.
All right, well, that'll be up in about 15 minutes. But first, here's Gardening with Embark. Time now for Gardening with Embark. And joining me in the studio here is Pablo Vimas, our resident gardening expert and the gardens manager for Embark Sustainability Society.
Hello, good morning.
It's week 32. We've had a bit of a mix-up in the weather. A little rain, a little cool weather,
oh,
which is
yes.
kind of relief, but good in the garden too?
Yes. So this week it started a bit warm and had a nice rainfall on Wednesday. And quite pleased with that.
Yep.
A break for us gardeners in watering. Yep. So now it was quite good. The soil is also wet. So we have to wait 48 hours to start thinking on, should I water again? Yep. So that will be for the weekend to see how warm the weather goes. Today is a bit comfortable. It's not too hot. So, yeah, very busy in the garden today.
Great. So at Embark, you're taking on a big project that perhaps many gardeners would face, especially gardeners doing box gardening, which is what Embark primarily method it uses.
Correct.
What's going on?
All right. So at the moment, we are in the process of moving one of our gardens.
Mm-hmm.
We have a garden that started in 2013,
yep.
and that was located or is located behind the Task One building.
And down the hill here.
Down
from.
The hill. So over the years, we've been rebuilding and replacing wooden boards because they are boxes, 4x4 feet boxes made with wood
mm-hmm.
and stand on top of wooden pallets.
Yeah.
So after 5 years of they were built,
mm-hmm.
the pallets start to rot.
Yeah.
So we needed to empty the full garden bed and replace the pallets.
Yeah.
At one point, we decided it's too much work replacing pallets every year almost.
Yeah.
Let's move to substitute them with plastic pallets.
Yeah.
So we did our effort to get back plastic pallets, and on top of that, we rebuild the garden beds. But later, all the boards that make the box start to rot.
Mm-hmm.
So now we are another problem that we need to replace.
Yeah.
In some cases, it was so bad that we needed to rebuild completely.
Right.
And then we have 2020, all the lumber, in particular cedar that we use, it went through the roof and too expensive now to repair. So we, being the last 2 years, thinking what is the best option for us to mm-hmm. be a long term and reduce that kind of work. So we went through.
And this is something I think any gardener at home needs to think about when they get into this. It's not setting up your garden in a box garden like that isn't just a one-time sort of bit of work. There's going to be this ongoing maintenance of replacing stuff and rebuilding boxes and whatnot.
Yes. So if you have a garden bed either sitting on the ground, in 3 years you will have to think to replace the wooden boards.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. If you have a frame, an in-ground garden bed with a frame, again, after 3 years, you will have to think we need to rebuild it.
Right.
So it's a constant thinking, constant rebuilding of your frames mm-hmm. and garden beds. But so as saying, now we have aluminum garden beds,
right.
and they are self-watering. So mm-hmm. there's a container with only one drainage hole, and we have a self-watering system that we are going to install. And on top of that, will be the soil. So,
what do the boxes look like? Just so people can visualize it in their mind.
All right. So it's a box 4x4, and at the bottom it has some holes for the pallet and mm-hmm. for the fork, because here in SFU everything is temporarily demonated.
Right. Right.
Has to have access to a forklift to move the garden beds wherever is needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why the reason they were initially on pallet.
Right.
So it has kind of a shape at the bottom is kind of a U shape for creating access to the forklift prongs, and then 6 inches from the bottom we have a 1-inch hole drainage hole,
mm-hmm.
so excess of water will just drain through there.
Yeah.
So the 6 bottom inches are going to be filled with lava rock, and on top of that lava rock we are going to put a landscape fabric. So this lava rock creates the reservoir, and mm-hmm. it's strong enough to hold all the weight from the soil on top.
Right.
Yeah. And then on top of that, we have the soil, and we will be planting. As it is a garden, self-watering garden bed, which is quite good for us, so we don't have to worry over the summer,
mm-hmm.
Needs to be placed at a level. So we don't want to be tilted to one side or to another side. It has to be just flush level.
Yeah.
So that allows that the water that is at the bottom in the reservoir stays at level. So all the the walled garden bed is provided with water at the same rate.
Right.
Because if we tilt it to one side of the garden bed will be soaking wet and probably never draining, and the other end will be completely dry.
Right, and especially with the lava rock, if it's tilted, that water level is going to be inches below the lava rock, where it's going to be hard to, it's not going to work its way up at the soil.
Correct, yeah. So otherwise we'll be completely flooded. And then we we will notice when we water as well, we will notice that the water will tend to run over the surface to one end, like, what's happening right there? Yeah. So that's a little work that we are doing here, because as you know, this garden is moving to the Maggie Bankstone field.
Right, so it's moving closer to where we are now.
Correct, yeah.
That's got to be convenient too.
Very much convenient to be close to the office and to the second garden that we have in the studio building.
Yeah.
So this area is a bit hilly as well and has kind of, is concave. So we need to create some level for the garden bed. So that's it. So that's very exciting. When we moved this garden over here, we had to go through all the process that we considered when we are building a new garden. Mm-hmm. First of all, where is the water?
Yeah.
So we had a water in the Maggie Bankstone field, 100 feet away from our garden.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to find a way how to bring water close by.
Right.
The other thing that we always need thanks to the garden is power, electrical power, where we are a source of electrical power. Sometimes we need to run some electrical equipment and we need some power. So then the sun, how much sun this area receives, and the other is how much wind.
Right.
So our garden bed is quite open, so lots of sunlight over the summer at 6 o'clock. We already have sunlight in the garden, right. So it's going to be very nice to grow any summer vegetable in there. However, very strong winds too coming from down the mountain.
Right.
So at the moment, what we have experienced over this, we started growing vegetables from March. Our lettuces in other garden is nice and tender and silky. Here, a bit tough.
Right.
Very thick leaves, very firm leaves, because just of the wind that they have to stand. So, very interesting. So, let's see how it goes for the winter. I know winter will have cold winds coming up.
Yeah.
So, that's very much our problem now, to think how we can protect our vegetables from those cold winds coming down the hill.
What sort of strategies are you thinking about for that, if you're finding it's a problem?
For that, we'll be start building hoop houses as soon as possible. And sure, the hoop houses will go by the end of mid-October will go, or if not early, because we just have to play to how to see how the cold wind is coming up. So if you are starting your garden, again, you will see how watery it is, what is the shade, where are the shady spots of your garden, where the water pools as well, because here we have an open field, so as well we need to see where the water pools, because on winter we don't want people have accidents.
Right.
You don't see, because everything is grass and can be slippery.
Yeah, you don't want to be puddles and stuff where people need to be working.
Yeah. And then they deciding the kind of vegetables that we're going to plant. So, so this week we are setting all our 20 garden beds.
Yeah.
And hopefully for next week we can start filling them with soil. And by the beginning of September, week 36, we will start cultivating those garden beds. So a new project for a new year.
Excellent. I'm interested in the garden boxes, because you said these ones are aluminum. Were they like a dedicated product that you were able to source?
Oh, yes. So we contacted a company, Green Theory.
Yeah.
So they help us to design the boxes. So the boxes have 4 feet by 4 feet by 20 feet high, and it has a lip at the bottom. At the top of the box has a lip of 1 inch.
20 inches?
20 inches tall.
Yeah, you said 20 feet. Whoa.
No, so 20 inches. Yeah, 2 feet tall.
Yeah.
So 24 inches. Yeah. And at the top there is a lip of 1 inch.
Yeah.
So that is to give a strength to the structure.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, we have some flanges along each of the sides. So triangle winglets.
Yeah.
Attached to the sides, so that prevents that the sides of the box just bends inwards or outwards.
Right, because wet soil can be really heavy.
Yes, so very, very heavy. So we are talking about half a cubic yard for each garden bed. So those are the boxes. And as I say, there is a drainage hole 6 inches from the bottom.
Right.
So Green Theory was quite kind to us. They helped us to design. They send the drawings. Mm-hmm. We agree, and they build it for us. And yeah, so it was quite exciting to work with them. Yeah.
Great. And this, of course, is going to significantly reduce that maintenance work you've had to do.
Correct.
Rebuilding boxes every year or two.
Yeah. So by having aluminium garden beds, we are talking 20 years down the road to think, oh, how much this we have destroyed this garden beds. So no more thinking, we have to rebuild. And, you know, learning gardens in any setting, either in elementary schools, high schools, universities settings, always is a you input money. You hardly get any money back. Right. You just keep putting money in that because it's a learning. It's a learning space. And what we grow, as we've been promoting before, what we grow is everything goes back to the community. So any vegetables that grow, we distribute to the community. So, yeah. That's
great. So you got the new boxes going in. You are doing a work party to help fill them.
Correct. So our work party is going to happen on next Friday, August the 15th.
Yep.
And we are calling everyone who has 2 hours time, come and help us. From 10 o'clock to 5 o'clock, we are going to be here on site. We have 20 garden beds to fill.
Yep.
So each garden bed, I mean, I said it's 2 cubic yards, so around 5 to 6 wheelbarrows per garden bed. Yeah. So it's, and we have the distance between our two gardens is around 10 minutes walk.
Right.
So it's 10 minutes walk empty, 10 minutes walk, 20 minutes walk back because it's loaded, it's heavy, the soil. And I'm glad that it has been quite dry these days.
Yep.
So the soil is kind of dry.
Yeah.
With rainfall from yesterday, it's okay. It's not too heavy. Because I'm trying to move the soil before the heavy rains in September or October comes, and where the soil is really, really heavy, and you don't want to leave too much. Yeah.
So that's Friday the 15th of August.
Correct.
And they can reach out to you for more info?
So we have a website, and our website, there is a registration form.
Yeah.
So register in there, and you will be in our list, and just show up with a set of gardening gloves and clothes that you don't mind getting there. Yeah, because it's we are careful, but it's still so just goes everywhere.
That's part of gardening.
It is.
What's the Embark website where people can look this up?
So you can look into embarksustainability.org or through our social media channels at Embark Sustainability.
Great. It looks like an interesting but also big project.
Yes, it's for everyone who is interested in getting a moment of exercise, physical exercise, or somebody who says, I have something, fresh air as well, and those who are into gardening, so that will be all welcome to help us. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will talk to you again next week.
That's right.
See you. Bye-bye. And thanks to Pablo for that. That was Gardening with Embark. We'll be back next week with more gardening tips and advice. But Peter,
so this,
set us up.
This is concluding the sixth week. It began with the first 3 weeks where Stephen Fan was part of the conversation. It was me and Adam Tadowski. I did sort of a semi-monologue the fourth week. And then Adam has a bit of a rebuttal, which he's finishing off for this week. Adam, you feel there were a few matters left unsaid. Well, you now have the opportunity this week to bring them about.
Thanks, Peter. I just to summarize, I was going on about the fall of the Soviet Union and how the country was left a mess as a result of the United States not providing much aid, or not just the United States, but the ideology in the 1990s was not to provide aid, but was the idea was sort of a shock therapy idea, and there were basic problems with communications and understanding of concepts that to us in the West seem perfectly normal, but in Russia, Soviet Union were completely misunderstood or not understood. Anyway, I made one mistake, though. I said that Boris Yeltsin, who was the president of Russia at this time, that to bring down the Soviet Union, the people who tried to take over the Soviet Union, that he stood in front of a tank. In fact, Boris Yeltsin was clearly inspired by a person in China who had done that. But Boris Yeltsin did not stand in front of a tank. He got on top of a tank. And sort of that was a sort of symbolic way of saying that the Soviet military was not with the people who were trying to overthrow Gorbachev and the Soviet government, and that the Soviet government would basically be no more, but that it would be replaced by the various, what are they called in Russia, the various, not states, states, I guess, the there were 15 republics. Republics, thanks, in Russia. Anyway, so Russia, so I left off about 2010, at the time that Russia, the Russian people themselves, no thanks to Putin, were beginning to turn around their country. They had stopped excessive drinking and stuff like that. So, and they were starting to work in local communities to make their local communities a better place, the sort of nonprofits and stuff as we have here in the West. So we can go forward a few years. And one thing to understand is Putin was had something of a light touch of a dictatorship insofar as he kept his finger or foot on the, oh, I forgot the word. He kept his foot on the people who, the oligarchs, but the oligarchs in turn kept their finger on the Russian people. And so he did not necessarily directly control the Russian people themselves, but through the oligarchs he was able to do so. But what had happened starting around this time a few years later, as civil society started to grow, was the Russian people themselves were finding ways, as tend to happen, to avoid the oligarchs. They were starting to build up their own businesses and stuff like that. Entrepreneurs were emerging separate from the oligarchs. All of these people were building up their own society that was separate and not controlled by the oligarchs. And of course, Putin couldn't handle this. So you, if you've read the book 1984, you might be familiar with, which is not so much in the movies, but one of the exchanges between Winston Smith and the person who's torturing him, who explains it doesn't matter who we're at war with, which is why we're always switching who we're at war with. All that matters is that we are at war because it eats up or destroys any surplus capital that the people themselves might be able to grow the economy if left unchecked, that could then might turn out to be a threat to Big Brother. So there is this theory that one of the reasons Putin invaded Ukraine in 2022 is he thought this civil society that was separate from the oligarchs, this economy that was separate from the oligarchs in Russia, that it was beginning to get too powerful and might challenge him. And he realized that going to war with Ukraine would eat up a good deal of this surplus capital. And in fact, we saw this where you had many of these Western corporations pulled out, many of which had like Russian franchises, McDonald's and stuff like that. And indeed, Putin, it seems, basically crushed this non-oligarch economy that was emerging in Russia. And that was about the only additional points that I wanted to make. But yeah, I don't know if there's any truth to this or not, but it is a theory as to what one of the reasons why Putin did this, the invasion of Ukraine. And I certainly think that it's logical, but whether there's any truth to it, I don't know. Anyway, so if you have anything to add, Peter.
Well, one thing I'm checking up on Wikipedia, Boris Yeltsin's term of office was after the collapse of the Soviet Union, 1991 to 1999. And Putin started in 2000 with a break with, can you pronounce this guy's name?
No, Medvedev.
Yeah, he was from 2008 to 2012. He was the president of Russia. So Putin has been the president since 2000 to the present day, and since 2012 straight. So there was a four-year break of someone else.
And even then, Medvedev was basically a Putin puppet. He went in there just to sort of fiddle with...
There were term limits to the presidency, so Putin became the prime minister. But he was effectively in control. Yeltsin was the president of Russia, or prime minister, I'm not sure.
President
of Russia before 1991 as well. There used to be there used to be a Soviet government, and then he was the elected president of Russia below that, and then Russia basically ceased to exist. The Soviet Union, ceased to exist. And for a time, there was something called the Confederation of Independent States, and that was a sort of voluntary organization of former Soviet states. And I don't know if any of that's still around, but the Soviet Union ceased to exist shortly after those who attempted this coup were deposed, and Gorbachev tried to come back as the general secretary, I guess, of Russia, of the Soviet Union, and that didn't succeed for long.
Now, do you think the shock doctrine tendencies were wrong for Russia, I take it?
There was too great a lack of understanding of what, if nothing else, between what was proposed and how the Russian leadership understood it, or to the degree that they did understand it at all, what they were being asked to do.
So what could have been done that would have been a better scenario during the 1990s?
Oh, I mean, that's a much broader question. I really don't know.
So you tend to agree with some aspects of the shock doctrine.
No, I'm just saying I don't, as with South Africa, since you asked last week, I don't know what alternatives were available at the time that might have worked. So I really, I'd need a lot more knowledge of what was
I can think of a few options myself. But we'll leave it at that. It seems like Adam has said his piece. And we'll leave this segment to end here. Peter R.H.
He's Peter Raymond Haskell.
that you said the full name for the first time on CJ.
Are you serious?
I go by Peter R.H. all the time. And you're Adam Tendowski.
Yeah, with no middle name.
Yeah, so I don't... Well, you didn't have to put that in there, but this will be the only show that we have the full name. It's like Charles Foster Kane. He had three... The fictional Charles Foster Kane.
All right, well, we're just about out of time here and at Speak Up, and I hope you've enjoyed the show today. Danny Nesvedrani will be on the air tomorrow at 10 a.m. with another edition of... Speak Up, and you can look for lots of exciting content coming up on that. So tune in again tomorrow at 10 o'clock. In just a few minutes is coming up Democracy Now!, and after that we'll have the world of world music with Wandering Rhythms oh my goodness, I'm just like...
In 25 hours, it's Raccoon City.
It is
25 hours from now.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, we're just about out of time for all this stuff. We're going to finish off the show with a bit of Destroyer. They're a Vancouver band. This album came out. This is called Hydroplaning on the Edge of the World. This album came out earlier this year and did... as usual with Destroyer, a lot of positive attention. Democracy Now! Up in about 45 seconds. Wandering Rhythms at noon. Typically Tuesday up at 3 o'clock, and a lot more great programming here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Does the wine or the whiskey miss me now? get smashed in the snow, I don't mind. We are gathered here today to have a real nice time. I have some friends.